Blog Talk Radio
presents a blow. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and we're with you on a Saturday night for a special broadcast. As you know, we normally only do our shows on Wednesdays and Sundays, but this month we've got so many great guests. We've booked every night of the month, it seems, but it's exciting. I'm loving it, and I'm really excited to talk to our guest tonight, Sean Mayotte. You guys, particularly guys, I didn't realize, may know him more than others. Before we start, real quick, let me just say thanks to our sponsors, the High Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, KWV Wines in South Africa, Tees for the Times and Other Stuff, Syntech Productions in Oka Harbor, New Jersey, Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake, Cloyden Designs in New Jersey, Think Big Picture LLC in New York, The Observer Newspaper, Kearney, New Jersey, Joey Max Cafe, Harrison, New Jersey, GMEBottles.com, and H21 Hand Sanitizer.
There you go, you got it all out.
I haven't said them all in one night in a long time because it's just so many.
I'm impressed.
God, there's more that I have to add, and I just have to get around to it. I feel horrible about it, but I'll get there, and, you know, they're cool with it, so I'm good. So with me on the phone is Mr. Sean Mayotte. How are you, Sean? How are you tonight?
I'm doing great right now. I'm really happy. I'm very, very blessed. I'm very, I'm grateful that I'm on the show. I'm grateful to be the guest on your show. And opening music, though, had me going, you know, I don't know if everybody heard it, but I didn't know if I was going to turn out to be Charlton Heston from Planet of the Apes or Dom DeLuise from History of the World. Which one was I going to be?
Or Elvis. No, I love that music. It's such a great buildup. It gets me going too, you know.
Yeah.
Like, here we go.
I'm a superstar now.
Well, you are a superstar. As I was saying to you earlier, you know, porn definitely would not be a topic that I would have on my show, but I have entertainment and I love
Shocking.
And I love entertainment and great stories. And not only were you in the porn industry, but you're also a musician and worked with some amazing people. And we'll touch on that. But what really got me about your story, Sean, and you know, you were was it the 80s was your, I guess it was the 80s, right? Was your high time then?
Yeah, the 80s was my big time because my son was born in 1990 and I became a full-time father. So although the money didn't stop, I found a way to continue keeping. I opened up 900 numbers and 976-6969 was our number. So I was able to raise him, you know, on my own without ever having to be without him. I was with him 24/7. Doing his diapers. His mother got involved at a little later point, and she became a great mother. So I have nothing but praise for her. But during the first years of his life, from 1990 when he was born, I was pretty much the primary caretaker. So that stopped everything. I wouldn't go on tour. I wouldn't do any music no more. I still did escort, you know, sex work, put it that way, with high-end clients. Mm-hmm. I wasn't gonna lose those guys, those people, and there were women. I can't name the names. I'm not gonna do that. But It was the '80s. The '80s were the years. They were heartbreaking. They were heartwarming. They were incredible, fun times. But at the same time, you did read my book, correct?
No, unfortunately, I have not. Mm-hmm. I have not. But
okay.
That's what the book synopsis is just pulling me in. You know.
Okay. So you got the synopsis. Yeah, the '80s were a very, very. I mean, a lot of the people that are probably listening to this can relate to me because they went through the same thing, a lot of the same thing. The only difference is that I was released to the streets from being incarcerated in the LA County probation system because I was taken away from my parents and placed in there for my own protection. And I lived there from 12, basically 13 to 17 and never saw the outside world. So that was from 1977 to 1982. So I, you know, when I went in, there was magazines. When I came out, there was MTV. There were pinball machines when I went in. I come out, and there's these Space Invaders and video games. So it was a big change when I came out. And I landed on the streets, and I landed right in the middle of the beginning of what was to be AIDS, the AIDS epidemic. And a lot of guys, my friends, were dying on the streets of a disease that had no name. So it was a very sad time too.
Right. Well, the reason I wanted to specify the 80s is because back then I was not watching porn, and if I have, it's our secret. It's our secret. But I mean, at the time I wasn't watching it, or maybe I would have known who you were at the time, you know.
Right.
What I meant. You know, and the 900 numbers is now the internet. So you know,
that's what killed us. That's what killed us. Exactly.
Right. So, but yeah. Now I have to ask you, I know, done what I know of going over everything and learning about you. Would you see, you had a very, very rough childhood. Now, would you say that led you to doing porn or, I mean, tell us about
that.
Well,
I mean,
I
didn't mean to cut into your question.
No, you did not. Go ahead. You surely did.
I love to talk about me. There's no doubt that by being sexually abused early on, that was a, you know,
a
that was what
force.
I thought my value. Yeah, driving force, but it was more like, that's what I thought my biggest value was because, you know, I was very pretty and whatever. And at the right time, you know, at that time, my look was very, was like today, it's a different look. It's more of a Latino, you know, the brown, it's their time now.
Right.
But at that time, my look was very, very popular. So
Christopher Atkins.
I was just going to say that Atkins is one. Sean Cassidy, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know the whole thing. And I had that. And when I was a little boy, though, you know, adults had no right to my body. I mean, I have a son. If anybody did that to my son when he was 13, what they did to me, they'd be in the body bag.
Was
but anyway, your, I won't. I don't want.
Was it your family? Mm-hmm. Was it your family that was sexually abusing?
Yeah,
my
mother.
System?
It was both. It was both. My mother had sex with me. You know, she claims, you know, when I confronted her about it later, it was like, I was drunk. I didn't know what I was doing. Mm. It's like, okay, I was drunk many times around my son, but I didn't molest. I didn't do that.
Right.
But you know, my parents were pretty much. I mean, my dad was evil. My father was just straight evil. He raped my sister from the time she was 2 until she was 12. And he got away with it because my sister and I, you know, I would walk in on it and he'd beat the hell out of me for seeing it and then trying to stop it. I'd try to intervene and then I'd be afraid of him for the next, you know, and he'd beat me all the time. But anyway, we went to our mother, who was the police in the house, to say, look what he's doing to her, you know, she's bleeding from that. And she didn't, she sent us right back to the rapist. She didn't give a shit. You know, she was drunk all the time. It was a horrible childhood. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I've been a drug counselor and I've heard some of the worst stories and mine ranks up there with the worst. I mean, I've had, you know, kids that were, and people on my caseload that were shot by their mothers. I've also been attacked by my parents, by my family.
When I was put into the boys' homes at 12, I was a pretty little boy, and I was beat up every day.
Yeah.
I had no visits from not one family member from the age of 12 to 17. But, you know, you can't go back. Regret is wishing for a better past. It's impossible.
Right.
So when people say, you know, what would you have done if you had not? There's no answer to that. It's a reality. I just accept it.
It happened.
And
it happened,
right.
Yeah.
You know, it's – and maybe some of that comes from it being so far away now. But and then again, the process of overcoming some of that, you never really overcome all that. I mean,
What was the final straw that they took you away and put you away?
We all mental defectives, you know. What is normal? It's a setting on a dryer, right?
I don't know what the fuck normal is.
The fuck is normal?
And when they find it, I don't want to know about it.
right. I like exactly. I fit in with the misfits and the outcasts and the creative people and all that.
Right,
and,
I
just, but to answer, I don't want my ADD to get involved here. What was your question? Your question was,
what was the final experience or what happened
straw?
That they took you away?
Two things was that the authorities had been tipped off that my mother had divorced my father. She was with a gangster. He was a hardcore original member of the Norwalk Vario gang. And they were dealing heroin out of my house.
Wow.
So they were tipped off to that. So they came in and investigated. But then again, I got myself into my own trouble because they gave me a lot of, like, lids, what they used to call lids and kilos, keys of pot to sell at my junior high school, my first year of junior high school. So I was the big dope dealer at the school, and I was getting high every day. And there's a funny scene in the book. I mean, I wrote about it where, you know, the principal, it's like got a cheese and chong. He comes in and, you know, opens my locker and shows me this. Now, do you know how this stuff got here, Mr. Probst? Do you know what this is?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, no,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm high as hell. And he's telling me it's a marijuana cigarette. He's fondling it. And we just want you to leave. We're going to expel you. We're not going to press charges on you. But then they got me for having burglarized the dope dealer, the main dope dealer's house in the neighborhood. So they had two things on me. They were going to take me away anyway because the parents were bad. And now they had a charge against me as a kid for
drugs.
Doing that. But it's
supposed
right,
well,
drugs.
Pot, drugs, pot.
Right.
Yeah.
And I also got my ass whooped for losing the pot that I was supposed to sell for, you know, my gangster
right,
father.
Right.
So the detective went to my mother's house and said, look, we don't want to take him out of the house. Get your shit together. This kid is too young. He's too pretty. He's going to get his ass. He's going to get killed in there.
Yeah.
I mean, because the youth prisons, I would say.
Hey, you must have stuck out like a freaking sore thumb.
Well, yeah, I stuck. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. And also, they're worse than some of the, you know, the you know, San Quentin, all that, because you have 17, 16-year-olds that are 6'4", 240 pounds that will kill you in a second. I mean, I saw murders, you know, and I was lucky I got through that, but it took a while. I mean, I was beat up for quite a while until I turned the other way, and I just said, screw this. You know, I'm going to become, you know, one of those people that you don't beat up anymore.
Well, I got to ask you this. When you said you were dealing the pot, do you think that's where you got your entrepreneurial skills to start the escort service?
Yeah, that had to do it. That's a good question. That's a great question. Great insight. That's part of it. But I also I don't know whether it was in my very early youth, but somewhere I got that radar of everybody staring at me, whether it was female or male. And because of being raped and being, you know, I mean, I was raped hardcore by counselors and priests. I was the lead.
How did you deal with that? My God. I mean, Jesus, every day.
I bled all over the place out of my anus. There you go. That's what I did. That's what's in the book. It is pretty brutal. I don't mean to make a joke out of it.
I'm so sorry that happened to you. I am so sorry that happened to you.
I really do.
I am
do.
So
but
sorry.
We did fight the Catholic Church, and we did. I was the lead spokesperson to Roger Mahoney for the LA County Archdiocese, and we did win a big settlement.
Yeah.
I had to talk to him, and he was like, he was a very cold, detached man, but I said, at the time I was in a Catholic boys' home, you could have made a Catholic soldier out of me. Instead, you turned me against religion. But in a way it was meant to happen because it meant that I saw the hypocrisy of all that.
Right.
You know, all these lying priests, every priest I knew was a bunch of lying, you know, people that in other words, there was a lot of betrayal during that time, but at the same time, it made me worldwise, like streetwise.
You learned a hell of a lot.
Yeah. I come out at 17 and I had no social skills. My only social skills were my musicality, my sexuality, and my anger. The only problem with the anger is that, you know, the skills you learn in danger require danger to be effective. And it took me a long time to realize that, you know, I didn't need to be, I wasn't in danger every day of my life on the streets.
Right.
But there was something, I don't know. I don't want
to. Was there actual drugs involved too? I mean, were you doing drugs or no? I mean, I don't mean pot. I mean,
no,
like,
you mean like meth
coke
and
whatever
MDMA?
Was going on.
Yeah. What was going on back then? No.
Yeah.
No, I saw too many friends die. When I got on the streets, I immediately had nothing, so I had to start hustling and prostituting.
Yeah.
So I went abroad. What was the big prostitute, street here in Long Beach, which was Broadway, and Long Beach is a big city. Long Beach is a half. It's like the 40th biggest city in the country, bigger than Cincinnati, Cleveland, a lot of big cities, and so it has a huge downtown and a large gay population. So I landed on Broadway. And I saw and met a lot of the boys I was in boys' homes with. They had been kicked out by their parents, and so they were doing the same thing. But what I saw was, and I detail it in my book in much more detail about, you know, because it was very heartbreaking to see guys come up, you know, they were coughing, like they couldn't stop coughing, and they would get white stuff on their tongues. And this is in 82, and it wasn't even called gay cancer yet. So when I saw this, I would learn from them because we'd talk on the corners about what the tricks were doing to them, and they were all bottoms. So the guys were bottoms, and the tricks were doing it, you know, fucking them in the ass, you know, doing that. I realized that's pretty much the how it was deposited, you know, semen deposited into your anus, and with the capillaries breaking, it would be blood-to-blood contact. So I avoided that. I wouldn't do that. And I think that helped me survive because not doing drugs too. Because
you must have been scared to death. I mean, any gay man at the time was scared to death. I mean,
everybody
AIDS
was
just, I mean, and straight heterosexuals too were scared, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
Was scared,
well,
I
had girlfriends too. I'm bisexual. I mean, you know, I had girlfriends left and right. You know, and I was mixing up all the time, you know, and getting into freak shows. I mean, I did everything. So it was like everybody was scared. And I kept count of the people who were dying. I just knew instinctively this was not going to end, that there was – government wasn't doing anything. I would see my friends die, and then I would read obituaries, and the families wouldn't put the cause of death. So people were dying of a disease that had no name.
Right.
You know, so
– I remember.
Yeah, you remember. And it was a horrible time because
we were all scared. We were all scared. And and at the time, when they said it was from, it's from any sex, but, you know, at that time it was gay sex. It's from gay sex.
Right.
So, for men in particular. So you guys must have been scared to death. I mean, oh, my God.
I was scared, but I got mad.
Yeah, but thankfully I didn't know anyone who passed from AIDS, and I'm very happy to hear, you know, have that in my mind, and I didn't have to live seeing that because it was a horrible death and still is, I'm sure. But, you know, especially like you said, nobody was doing anything about it.
No, I mean, I'm very happy to hear that you didn't have to you know, see a friend or a family person die that way. Because I lost 100. Well, I don't like to say lost because I didn't lose them. They died. You know, they caught an illness and it was a grisly death. You know, I'd see people go blind. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would caretake for them. I'd change their bed sheets. I'd, you know, put them in, and it just became a part of my life for a long time because that was my family. You know, I was in the straight world. You know, I partook in the straight world, but because the straight world to me, and I am bisexual, so I had a lot of girlfriends who didn't even know I was traversing two different worlds, and. I would hear the jokes, the sick jokes, you know, another AIDS, another infected dick sucker and all that shit from guys that I would beat the crap out of if they weren't somewhat good friends. And then I just ended all the friendships. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I didn't want them to know that I was a part of the world that was, you know, I was in the beginning of APLA where we all got together and had to fend for ourselves because the government wasn't doing anything for us. And,
oh, absolutely! You kidding? If a woman knew you were gay at the time, they wouldn't. They wouldn't have slept with you. You know, a straight woman.
No,
absolutely not. Absolutely not. Yeah. So, how did you get the escort service to become so popular? I mean, is it okay to mention the celebrity names that you have in the synopsis or not?
I can name some. I mean, I can't name everybody. I don't have the money to defend myself against people that have $500 million. You know,
let's pick someone who's no longer with us. Okay, Robert Reed.
Robert Reed.
I always wondered how sadly had these celebrities had to be closeted, and I always wondered who they found to love them and not share and tell the world, you know?
Well, you just
I
described
always wondered
Robert.
That.
You just described Robert. That's exactly who he was. He was from the Midwest, and he was very, very down-home, a soft talker. He paid me extra to keep my mouth shut. And I told him, I said, one thing that I did have was a lot of, and I say this with the utmost humility, I was very kind and compassionate because I felt a lot for them, for these guys, because they had to hide. I understood why they were hiding it, you know, and I don't believe anybody has the right to out anyone, you know, that's none of your business what somebody's going through or why they're hiding, what their, you know, their careers are involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I understood that. And when I put that ad in the Advocate, and I had no idea the power that the Advocate wielded in the gay community at that time. So I got calls from Robert Reed, from Dak Rambo, and Numbers, that's the other place. I met Michael Feilerman, the producer of Knots Landing. And I can't name by name,
of course,
but also one of my mentors who was big on Wall Street, you know, and he treated me like a father, like the father I never had. And there was another one who was the founder of one of the wealthiest oil and gas dynasties in California, and he used to take me on his private helicopter and land on the oil well.
Right.
It was fun. But
so now you've had the good life. I mean, you're hanging out with these celebrities. I mean, they're loving you for the time you're together, and I'm sure they showered you with everything. So
they
now
showered
the
me
homeless.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Did you become homeless sometime after that, or as well, or
when you were
younger?
I was just when I was younger. I was only homeless when I got out at 17. I was only homeless maybe 4 weeks. You know, I maybe not even that long, because I wasn't going to spend. I saw everybody, and the first people that helped me more than anybody else were transgender people. They saw me, they invited me into the bar right there, Little Lucy's on Broadway, and they showered me with love. And I was 17, a little kid, and they said I could stay at their apartments, and you know, they were just wonderful people. And so I have so much love in my heart for anybody transgender. And I was attracted to some of them too, I'll be honest. You know, the women, half women.
Yeah, I find them very attractive.
Very attractive.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sometimes stunned when I see them. I'm actually stunned.
Right.
Like if you go down to P Town, I'm like, oh my god, I couldn't believe it. I was just absolutely stunned to see.
They know how to do makeup better than my ex-wife. Yeah, that's right.
I know. I know.
Yeah, and they were the sweetest people in the world to me. And I what the difference was I wasn't going to waste money. I had learned how to be – I mean, I was a frugal. I knew I had no father. I had no mother that was going to help me. In fact, my mother comes down. I write it in the book, and I really want people to read the book so they get everything on my story. But you know, my mother, who was a piece of shit my whole life, had the audacity while she's drunk to find where I lived down there in the gay neighborhood, what we called Homo Heights down there in Long Beach. And she said, you're probably prostituting down here, but I need some of your money. I need money. So at the same time she's begging me for money, she's castigating me for how I'm earning it. Anyway, right. That's a little part of it.
Yeah.
But,
well, I actually was going to ask you, what was their reaction when they found out that you were doing porn and or the escort service? What was their reaction? They didn't care or what?
They were too self-centered to even think outside of their own mind. You know, when you're that selfish and that self-centered, you don't, and you can't even care about your own child. I mean, I raised my son. Mm. I couldn't even imagine, you know, being that way. When you're that locked up in your own head, you don't know what it's like to love anybody else. All you care about is yourself. And so they didn't care what I did. I mean, I was the only one that was a little bit of ashamed of it.
Yeah.
You know?
I hope you don't mind me asking this. And if it's too personal, you don't have
to.
Are they still alive?
No. My mother.
Have they ever apologized to you or said anything?
No.
Wow.
I'll tell you, a recent event has happened that has made me really, really happy. My sister seems to have come to some sense of reality because she was abused worse than me.
I was going to say, what happened? What lane did your sister go in her life? I'm curious. If it's in the book, don't give too much away. I want people to buy your book.
I want them to, too. Yeah, it's in the book. And she got into shooting drugs and she got in with gangsters and white supremacists and all this stuff. She didn't know any better. I mean, mother, nobody helped her. She got on her own at 14, right? And I was in the boys' homes and juvenile halls. And so she was trying to make her way, having been raped from and betrayed, I'd say worse than I was, as bad as I was. And she didn't come out of it until her 40s and 50s. I mean, she was in prison a few times and all that. You know, but she recently got a hold of me, and I thought she was still pushing a shopping cart. You know, she basically got down to that level. Mm. And she got a hold of me recently and bought my book. And I was like amazed. I was like, because, you know, I had always helped her with money once in a while and given her, helped her, you know, to survive. And she buys my book, and she sends me back an email. My God, Doug, you know, I feel so bad that I never visited you when you were locked up. And she was telling me, and she also brought up a situation that I must have blocked out. My parents actually put me in a mental hospital before I was ever in a boys' home. And when they put me in there, she reminded me that we didn't know where we were going.
Why did your crazy parents put you in a mental hospital?
Because my father wanted me out of the home so he could – Right. No, they needed to be there. But my father wanted me out of the home so he could rape my sister, continue on doing that. That's what I figured it out. But my mother took us to the hospital. She told us she was taking us to some place fun. And then when we get up to the hospital, the mental hospital, two guys in – it's like a scene out of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest – come out in jackets and grab me, and I'm screaming and crying. I'm like, what are you doing? I don't know if they're going to kill me. I'm 11 years old. And my sister said she was beating on my mother, telling me, how could you do that to Doug? And for her to email me that just a couple days ago, I was like stunned because that's one of those things I don't remember. I remember being there, but I don't remember that incident. So it must have been one of those things that was so traumatic I blocked it out. But my sister coming to grips with that and telling me how sorry she was that she wasn't able to save me.
Yeah.
And that she actually
couldn't save herself. How could she save you, honey? She couldn't save herself.
I know. That's exactly what I told her. I said, look, Jamie, I have there's no resentment. There's no judgment. There's no nothing coming from me to you. You were the only person in the family that loved me, and I loved you, and I remember that beautiful little girl. that I, you know, that I want to cry, but I wanted to run into the, you know, when I went into the bedroom when he was raping her and I heard her screaming, you know, I have a song about it. I wrote a song about it and it's a powerful song, but you know, if we get this thing made into a play, it'll be in the play, but I'll send it to you.
Yes,
you.
Please.
Yeah.
I'm the two of you. God, my heart breaks. You lived in such hell. No child should have to live that way. None.
No, they shouldn't. But you know what? I when I got out, I saw a world that most kids who would have grown up in a different, like, you know, John Hughes movies. You know, I didn't like those movies because I couldn't relate to any of them. You know, they're dancing in detention. They're angry in detention. They have these characters like, oh, if you're going to complain about a detention or a home, you know what? You have to have a home in the first place to complain about it.
Right.
I didn't have that. And so my point is that I was exposed to a world that gave me a world knowledge and education about people that none of these people that I grew up in my neighborhood knew, they knew nothing.
No, it was
about
a hell of a way
world.
To learn it. It was a hell of a way to learn it. You shouldn't have had to learn it that way. Some of us learn
Thank
it
you.
Too, but you shouldn't have had to learn it that way. That's fucked up.
No, but I ended up, like you were saying, like about some of the celebrities and the people that, you know, because I ended up playing with Billy Preston and Neil Young.
I know. Crazy.
Yeah, and I got in Dan Hartman. I got involved with some really good people, and I was able to see the world from many different viewpoints. You know, I was homeless, searching for food and feces when I first got out, and then I'm riding on a private helicopter, waving at the poor people. It's like, and then I'm hanging out in really expensive restaurants, being flown all over the world to see plays and all that, read the book. People buy my book. I will get an erection in my heart when I hear you.
And the book, by the way, is called The Musings of a Narcissist, a Survivor Story, guys. Please, if you want to call in and talk to Sean, or should I say, you mentioned several times, Doug, why'd they make you change your name to Sean Mayotte?
Well, because they were trying to create porn stars and you, nobody would use their real name because a lot
of
people were ashamed of it. And yeah, you know, and they
didn't
want their families to find out.
It was taboo. I'd never heard of you in the 80s. I mean, I wasn't watching porn in the 80s. Jesus Christ. I was, a teenager in the 80s, 20s maybe. Yeah, 20s, early 20s, very early 20s.
Early 20s, yeah. Yeah, me too. I turned 20 in 1985. But
when did I turn 20? I don't know. We should start
counting backwards now. I just turned 56. I want to go backwards anyway.
When I hit 50, I started at 10 again. So right now I'm only 17. I'm only 17. She's only
like
17.
Yeah. What was that, Winger? I remember.
Oh God, was it Winger?
I had a lot of long hair. Played in a lot of hard rock bands too.
Yeah, how'd you hook up with all these bands too? I mean, you had a horrible life, but you really came. I said it earlier. I said you came on top, and I didn't mean it as a pun. And when I wrote it, I said shit.
I just got that. Yeah, I'm a top.
And then I said, but you truly did come out on top, and that's why I had to hear your story, because it just I'm so happy for you that after being through such hell is the only word I can say, hell.
Well,
and
I appreciate the compliments.
And to where you are now, you're happy. I mean, I don't know how you've been dealing with this and your sister psychologically your entire lives, and you sound very happy, and I'm so happy about that. I'm so happy for you.
I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate you saying that. I do need to say though that it's still a battle. I mean, if you talk to the people around me and the bands that I was in, one of the reasons why I was never able to keep a band together for long enough to get big success. I mean, I had some success. Was because I was an asshole. I mean, I still had those, you know, I still got angry real quick. I was ready to fight real quick. I mean, people that have seen me, you know, I name certain people that know that are close to me, even people on the internet that have seen me fight with other people on the internet. And I finally stopped that because it was wasting so much time in my book. I would argue with them about
politics.
Yeah, exactly.
I know. I got sucked into it.
I hate those Republicans.
We don't do politics on this show, thank God.
I know.
Leave
it alone. Don't get me started. They won't like
me. We'll have to talk that another time, you and I.
Yeah, another time.
Yeah, another time because
so
oh,
I'm not
man.
Perfect. I mean, I'm able to control, but I went through years of psychiatric help. I immersed myself in it.
I would
and
think
then becoming
so.
A drug Yeah, and becoming a drug counselor, you have to go through therapy yourself because you can't transmit something to people you don't have.
Right.
And, you know, I have to remind myself that I'm blessed, I'm thankful, I'm grateful every single day because I can find something wrong and become a victim in a second if I want to. I just don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
You found you're happy and you're hanging on to it.
I'm hanging on to it.
I have to ask you about your son. Did you tell him what was going on, or was it you guys happened to just I saw that you went to look at your modeling career, and was that when he found out what you were actually doing in your life, or how does your son feel about your life? He obviously knows that you went through hell.
Oh, yeah. He's one of my biggest supporters. He didn't know about that, and I wasn't doing that when I was escorting, but, you know, he obviously didn't come along with me when I did that.
Of course not. No. But when he fully understood what you were doing, I mean, and then when he knew your history about your childhood, I mean, like you said, he's your biggest supporter.
He hates my mother. I mean, he's been dead for 6 years, but he hates my parents. He knows. My son, I'm one of the luckiest, most blessed men in the world. My son, there's no such thing as a terrible two. Whoever calls their kid a terrible at two is a terrible parent. I mean, I'm an authority figure on that. I had him 24/7, did all the diapers, pulled the bacon out, what was then the VCR. I did all that. I coached his teams. I did those things. But I wasn't perfect. I did yell at him. I never hit him. I would never hit a child.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I never would do that. But, you know, and when he was 16, he and I sat down at the computer. And it just occurred to me, hey, whatever happened to that name Sean Mayotte? So we Googled, you know, Sean Mayotte, and he goes, Dad, look at this. And I was all over the world. It was like I had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there were like, websites devoted to me in South America. I was in every magazine all over the world. And I was like, oh, my God, I got to write something. I got to capitalize on this. You know,
I was going to say, that's when you figured out, I'm making money somewhere. Where's my piece?
That's right. And I got to thank, you know, three people, really. And John Michael Cox, Terry Knoll, and Matthew Rettman, who really, really, really understood my story once I got some of it written and understand. And they also helped me realize that it was okay to be that. It was, you know, it was okay to be naked and have and turn people on, and I did something.
Well, when you were doing the porn, I mean that's you're acting, really. I mean, you're an actor as well, so I mean somebody has to do it.
But my porn,
right? acting. It's acting.
But I was I only did two movies. I was mainly a photo shoot guy.
Yeah.
If you look at the photo shoots, there's a reason for that, and I won't go into that. But you know, I had something a lot of people liked. So, and it went around the world. And the guy who did the photography was an incredible, one of the greatest ever, Ken Sussman, who'd use the name Kurt Diedrich Studios. You know, he wasn't a good man, but those pictures are worthy. They're like timeless photography, and you know. Josh was just like, wow, Dad, you know, you're all over the world. You need to capitalize on this. And we both talked about it. And, you know, so I started writing the book about it, but I didn't want to lie. I didn't want to make up stories. I didn't want to say that I had a good child. You know, I was going to tell the brutal truth. I mean, I was living a double life. You know, there were people when I was coaching my son's teams, you know, I had HIV. And I luckily I caught it at a time when the pills had just come out. Now, I'd lost all these people. But I was coaching his teams, and I had 40 pills in my pocket. And I had to take them at different times. And yeah. They would kill you. I had friends that committed suicide rather than take the pills because they were that bad. It was AZT. Mm. And I'm standing there coaching my son's teams with the other coaches, and they'd stand there, and I'd hear them talk about faggots with AIDS. Well, I'm standing there with pills in my pocket. And and I'm the guy that the kids want me to take to the Knott's Berry Farm and all that stuff. So I was able to, you know, I had to hide stuff, and at the same time I was able to see different sides of people, you know.
Right.
There's a lot of hate. There's a lot of hate in this world towards anything gay, anything gay. And in my opinion, from all of the years that I've seen it, dealt with it, and I had friends had battery acid thrown in their eyes before they walked into a gay bar with me, and wow. And they disfigured them and they died. You know, Randy's who I'm talking about. He died 2 years later, and I've had friends murdered. Two of them were murdered because they were gay. And it's silly. It's all because it looks so odd to straight people. It just looks odd. That's all it is. So they fear it, and they make up all these religious stupid. I mean, religion has ruined everything. It's like, you know, you're all up in our business, all up in everybody's business, telling us how we should live, and yet you're supposed to be the good people. I don't see any gay people going into your neighborhoods with signs holding up, say, you know, you're going to hell for being straight.
Yeah, right.
That kind of, you know.
Well, and the hate now for everybody is just I've never known so much hate in my life. I knew there was some racism. Jesus, my God, this is disgusting.
That's another thing. Yeah, that's another
thing. I'm embarrassed.
There's a lot of black musicians saw that. Yeah,
I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed
what's going
too.
On.
I'm ashamed of my own country. I really am.
It's horrible the way people are. I mean, it's like, what are we going back in time here? It's just ridiculous. Anyway,
it is.
Another time for that too. So,
anybody want to call in?
Yeah, I asked them. They're probably enjoying hearing your story because you know what? No, honestly, a lot of people, they listen in their leisure. They go listen after the fact. So you know, but
well, I love that.
Well, it is a Saturday night, you know, it is a Saturday
right,
night.
Right, everybody's out having a good
time.
Yeah,
well, you know, but yeah, people do go back and listen. But trust me, there'll be about at least 5,000 for sure tonight. That's been our goal lately, 5,000 per show the last few weeks, yeah. So, or more, could be more. You know, I'm just talking the last couple of days, you know. So, but anyway, you know, that listened live. So I'm not talking about the downloads, the people who download, but, anyway,
that's even more, yeah.
Yeah. So, in regard to the book too, what made you want to write the book? I mean, other than, you know, there's a story there and everything. What was final? Was it something that was helping you deal with it mentally by doing it or?
Absolutely.
You know,
well, that's part of it. You hit part of the nail on the head right there. I had to get it out. I couldn't keep it inside. You know, I would be around people who, you know, were trust fund babies, and they'd talk about the world in ways that I knew they didn't know what the hell they were talking about because I had seen completely different things. You know, I spent years, you know, when I was touring, playing with my own bands, writing songs like Father Francis Goes Down. And I'd have girls in the audience who'd cry. There'd be some people. But nobody believed us that priests were molesting kids for years.
Right.
So I had to tell the truth. It's just a part of me. Even when I went to Geffen Records and David Geffen, I called myself the truth. That was going to be my artist name because I was going to be honest. But by being honest, I had to tell on myself too. So I just had an inkling that it might be able to connect with some people because they might have, you know, dealt with some of the same pain and they might have seen the world from a similar viewpoint. But I felt that most people didn't, and they didn't know what was going on at the same time while they were, you know, selling stocks and going to college. I mean, I couldn't relate to anybody, you know, living in a dorm and their parents paying for everything and, you know, all these movies. Although I've never, ever you know, I guess there's a lot of compassion in me because I do understand when you lose somebody like your mother and all that, I can understand because I wanted a mother too. But I understand, you know, the pain of that, and I understand why we celebrate Mother's Day and why we do that. I don't put it down. I just don't relate to it. You know,
I
don't relate to Christmas. You know, I don't relate to any of that because when
I never had it.
I was locked up. When I was locked up, the Christmas gift we got outside ourselves was a little toothbrush and a piece of soap, and that was it.
That
you know?
Sucks. Listen, honey, we got a caller. You ready? You want to
yeah,
speak to somebody?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah,
hang on.
I'm ready.
I need my inhaler tonight. I apologize, guys. I keep clearing my throat.
I got one too. Hey, we got a lot in common. We got to write a song on an inhaler together.
Yes. Let's see who we got on the line. Let's see. Hold on. Hey, welcome to Applause Radio Show. You're on with Sean Mayotte. You have a question or just want to say hi?
Oh, hi, Sean. It's Joey Steele. How are you?
Hey, Joey, how are you?
Hi, Joey.
Now, there's I love Joey. Go ahead.
Yeah, big congratulations. Mm-hmm. I do have a thoughtful question for you. I'm curious about, you know, it's been wonderful hearing you talk about your experiences. What did you discover about yourself finishing the book that you didn't know about yourself before you started the book?
Wow,
that's a great question. I told you there's a reason why I love Joey. He's smart and he's beautiful. That's a good question. One thing that I discovered about myself is that I could do it, that I could actually complete it, and that I could execute and finish a project. And also that I survived. I'm a survivor. That I will not give up until, you know, when I have a mission, I'm on that mission and I'm going to finish it. That's probably the biggest thing that I discovered. And also, after it was out, I discovered that it actually resonates with people. I had no idea whether it would or not. You know?
Well, we need survivors telling their stories, right? Because just imagine, like you said, you know, people helped you out, and I think that's what's great about what you're doing, because there's definitely, as you were both saying, there's so much trouble in the world now. There's going to be somebody else out there that needs those survivors telling their stories that they know they can survive too.
And it's going to be okay.
You make me feel good saying that. Because I want people to know that they can survive, and they can survive. If I can survive, you can survive. Yeah. That's an important thing for them to realize. I had kids on my caseload that were, you know, 22 years old, HIV positive. Their parents threw them out of the house, and they were killing themselves because their parents hated them because they were gay. And it took me a long time to get them to realize that they had self-worth and that they didn't need to go out and kill themselves through the use of drugs. That wasn't the way to go. They were worth, and they were valuable. They weren't what their parents made them out to be. So
it was such a different time. Everything was secret. You had to keep it secret, and you know, it was a hard life. It was a lonely life if you were a child growing up closeted. You know, it was lonely. You know,
right? No, yeah. It was. Well, Joey's one of those people that's straight out. He's out, and I love Joey very much. He's, you know, he reminds me of my transgender people. My family.
Oh, you guys know each other. How do you know each other?
Yes, Facebook. It's a Facebook friendship, but it feels like it's more than that. Definitely.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Joey, thank you so much. I was gonna say thank you so much for calling.
He's a pretty boy.
Yeah,
he's prettier than me.
Yeah, but something else. Oh,
one last question for John.
Sure.
To light the mood. What do you reveal about Archie in the book?
That's a great question. That's a funny question. This book ends at my age of 30, so there's a second half coming. I did that on purpose because I wrote so much for so many years. I had to cut so much out, and then in the beginning, I was naming names. I mean, I was naming everybody, and then attorneys saw it, and people that I know saw it, and they said, you can't name that name. They'll sue the hell out of you. And there were women, female names in there that are very famous and are still alive. They would sue me. And so Archie was not alive at this time.
But so Archie
in the next book, in the next book, Archie plays a huge role. He is, that's our little Boston Terrier. So, but he's more than a Boston Terrier. He's everybody. He's special. Believe me, he's special.
Yeah.
Joey, so he still has time to get agent representation for that.
Yes,
next book.
I know. I know. He's got. Archie needs an agent. He's got a portfolio. You know, he just landed a job with Dog Fancy. He's weeding. He's sniffing out, you know, stories. Yeah, he's incredible. And everybody gets on Facebook. They love Archie. Yeah, thank you, Joey.
Cute.
Yeah, Archie's cute. Archie, Joey Steele just asked about you. There you go.
cute. Well, Joey, thank you so much for calling, and thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joey.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. Does Joey have a copy of the book?
I don't know.
We'll find out, because if no one else called in, he just – if you're listening, Joey, just one. Mm-hmm. If no one else calls in, you just want a copy, an autographed copy of Sean's book, mm-hmm. The Musings of a Narcissist, A Survivor Story, and it is. And I have to ask you, who is the narcissist in this story?
Me. And the
you?
Reason I say that – yeah, a lot of people wondered about that. They didn't think that was a good title. And, of course, Donald Trump ruined it. But I don't think he ruined it. I thought it was funny at the time.
What else hasn't he ruined? Anyway.
But I didn't let him ruin it. The thing is that when I was becoming a drug counselor, I had to read the DSM-4. The DSM-4 is a Diagnostic Statistic Manual of Psychiatric Disorders. So I'm reading the damn thing, and I'm learning about histrionic, borderline, all these disorders. So I'm qualified to diagnose. And then I read narcissistic, and I'm like looking at it going, that's me. And it's true. I mean, I have those tendencies. And I love the way Matthew Rettman, in an interview I did with him, he called it a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never thought about it like that. But, you know, because I could play Bach and Beethoven when I was 4. And I could play, you know, on a high level. I was an A-list player in the business and all that. So that, on top of my looks, did give me a bravado. I was an egomaniac with no self-esteem, put it that way.
Well, music must have been some kind of an escape for you, no?
Oh my God, it was everything. Music was everything. You know, a lot of my songs are deep and heavy and very, very about, you know, it's more of an escape, I couldn't live without music. Yeah. And writing it and listening to it and all that.
Yeah. Well, we have another call. You want to take another call?
Yeah.
Hang on. Let's see who we got.
Me too.
It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying speaking with you tonight. Hi. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. You're on with Sean Mayotte. Mm-hmm. You have a question, or you just want to say, hey.
Yeah. Hey, Sean and Joanne. It's Stephen Joseph. How you doing?
Hey, Steven, how are you?
I'm good. Yeah. I just had to call in and just say, first off, this is one of the best shows I've ever heard.
Oh,
not that your shows aren't
all
good, but this has just been amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't even want to call in because I was just like, I can't think of the right word, but
perplexed. You're part of the conversation now. You're part of it now. So come on, what do you got to say, Joe?
I was going to tell Sean, definitely you are a survivor. I mean, this is your story is just incredibly amazing.
Isn't it crazy?
Thank you. I'm very humbled to hear that. Thank you.
I mean, you're welcome. We could be on the phone for hours talking about this, but
I did see a comment you made on the internet, and I was really, really, really honored to hear what you said. I wasn't sure how to answer back, so I just answered Joanne back. But I really appreciate your kind compliments. Yeah,
How you made it is just amazing.
I got lucky.
You know, continue.
I'm floored. By it too. I'm floored by it too. Really, I really am. That's why I said I have to talk to you. I had to have you on because I just had to hear this story and
Joanne,
yeah,
I'd love to talk with you and
myself.
Steven. Well, of course, you and I and Joanne, we're going to talk more. We're going to have
you know, we'll have a whatever the relationship brings us.
Yes, we'll take this offline and we'll hang in.
But
yes,
I'd love
absolutely.
To talk to Stephen too sometime.
Yes,
you know,
go ahead, Stephen.
Really,
what do you want to talk to Sean about tonight? Since you have him.
Oh, I mean, like I said, he told us everything.
there's a lot of stuff in that book. You have the book?
I'm sure there is. Me, no.
Well, it's time to buy it. It's time.
Right.
I'm
gonna have to add it to my collection. But yeah, no.
Well, now that we had more than one caller, I'm gonna have to put a name in a hat. And
okay,
Steven,
yeah, you got it with Joey
tonight.
And Steven's name in the hat because we do have a free book that we're giving out tonight for one of the two.
Yeah.
So it's either Joey or Steven.
Right. Right.
That's not hard. That's not too. That's not 40 names. That's funny. Okay.
I know, yeah. A or B. But I think that's why nobody's calling, because they're just so – you don't want to interrupt you guys.
Well, that's what I said to them. I said, we're having such a great conversation. Mm-hmm. I think people are just listening, you know. That's what
Thank
I said.
You.
They are.
That's really sweet.
Definitely, Sean, you're the best. I mean, it's
just – remember, there's a book there that tells a lot more. I mean, it is really brutal and – I was on a child abuse podcast the other night, and the lady was like a saint. She was incredible, and people were calling in. They were going, and she was telling them, if you read this book, it's not like the others. He really gets down to gritty details and tells the brutal truth sexually, in every manner. So I really am proud of it. So one thing I'm proud of is that I'm honest. I don't lie.
Right.
I don't tell bullshit.
That's good. And if somebody else thinks they've had a bad life, talk to you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
that's kind of true, but at the same time, it turned into a good life. My son
You said there's a part two to this, huh?
Yeah, that's why I ended it at 30, because, you know, there's a definite part two. And there's a part two that where I falter as a parent, you know. I became a millionaire, and I thought it was my job. That's where the narcissism really came in. You know, it's like, okay, I made all this money. I'm buying you these cars, Josh. You're living in my house, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I yelled at him, and he had senioritis during his senior year in school, ditched a whole bunch of times when I found out, you know, I went nuts and all that stuff. But, and, you know, so it, you know, I'm not perfect. And, but
well,
we have
no,
a great
nobody
relationship.
Is.
Right.
Nobody
well,
it's
is.
It's like you took the worst part of a life and actually made it good.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Just
like you said,
up.
You're a survivor.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You so much, Stephen.
Yeah, I mean, like
thank
I
you.
Said, and I'm the same age as you, so I get it. You know, that whole time of growing up
you
in the 80s.
You lived the whole time, yeah. Watching everybody die. Not knowing if it's our time yet. Next.
Yeah, well, where I grew up, you know, it wasn't different. It was a lot different than California, the East Coast was back then.
Ah, okay.
You know, it was a completely different world out here, but no, you knew things were out there, and it's like, wait a minute, I'm like 18 years old in 1982 thinking, okay, I can't do anything now, you know?
Right. That was a horrible thing to feel. That's a horrible way to approach your 20s. You're supposed to be out fucking, you know, everything.
I got told that by
one of my biggest clients. You should be fucking everything you should be doing. I'm like, I don't know.
Well, Sean, I know you don't know, but I know Steven does listen to the show. I don't know if he caught the one about we had Alex Liu on. He directed a documentary called, I believe it's called A Sexplanation. And he was
a gay
young man who was being taught sexual education in high school, and he was confused beyond belief because he was told, don't have sex, you'll have AIDS, you'll get AIDS and die. That's, you know, even,
I went
even
to school
for all the kids, and here he is, he's a gay kid, closeted, and he said to him, it's like, oh my God, if I have sex, I'm going to die. And he said his sexual education in school messed him up so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
So many young people were told that.
I went to, to make it even worse, I went to Catholic school in Delaware.
Oh,
like
that's
the nuns.
Yeah, the nuns. Your bleeding knuckles. Yeah. Horrible.
You know?
That's horrible.
That was the...
Yeah.
So yeah. I have to look. I missed that one, Joanne. I'm gonna have to.
Hey,
look,
you
got to
read my book
the
because there's a section in there where I talk about. I used to call. Oh my God, I don't want to give too much away, but there's a section there where I click. You know, Catholic girls love bisexual boys because I used to call into churches just for fun to get the nuns to masturbate while they were on the phone with me. Now, there you go. There's a section. And I would talk about two guys doing it, and they would get all hot and bothered. And if you read the chapter, you'll figure out that, yeah, it's not like I invented, you know, I figured out the helix of the DNA, but I was spending too much time trying to root out the hypocrisy. And at the end, I'd say, see, you just talked to somebody about sex, and you were masturbating, and you're a nun. Anyway,
there you go. Oh my God!
And they were getting off on listening
too.
To two guys. So there you go. Anyway,
right.
The nuns
well,
are
Stephen, anything
too,
else for Sean? I'm sorry,
no,
Stephen, I cut you off.
No, you're fine. Like I said, the nuns are human too. But no, like I
that's
said,
right.
You
that's exactly right. Nuns are human. That's a good way to
keep
put
going.
It. Keep going.
Get part two out. Get part three out with all the names after you're not here anymore so we can really find out all the details.
There's only the only problem with that is there are children of those people, and I know the children of some of those people, and they're embarrassed by their parents' sexuality, and I'm not sure whether they'd sue me or not. They're my age.
Well, you don't have to answer. I'm mm-hmm. curious. Was Liberace one of them?
No, I never did Liberace. Perry Ellis, yes, and a bunch of others. I mean, I could name a whole lot more, but they're in the book. Read the book. I'll give you a few more. You know, Sandy Gallen, a couple others, and I can't say the women because the women are still alive and they're very well.
This is like a Jackie Collins novel all over again.
It is. Oh, my God.
It is. Think of Barbara Bel Geddes or Victoria. No, never mind. I won't say that.
No, I know.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
well,
never mind. Never mind.
Stephen, thank you. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you all.
Speaking with you. I mean, we haven't spoken. When was the last time we spoke? Months when Barbara Eden was on.
Well,
we
talked. We talked a lot about our COVID shot experiences.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Did you get both
That's
of them
a whole other
so
show.
No, I'm waiting for the next one. Very soon. Yep.
Yeah, we got our second
J&J.
One.
Jay.
So far, there's no Jewish space lasers coming down to shoot it. You know,
like no, J&J, I'm
Stephen,
one and done
I gotta give
now.
You much love. And
likewise,
I really appreciate your compliments. That really made me feel good. Thank you.
Well,
no,
thank
you
welcome,
so much for calling,
you.
Stephen. And you know I love you
welcome,
that you listen.
Mm-hmm.
Now we gotta bounce the hat. We gotta bounce the hat to see if it's Joey or Stephen that gets the free book.
Right.
We'll mud wrestle over it.
Yeah. All right, hon. Take care. Thank you so much for calling.
You're welcome. Love you guys. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye,
Stephen.
Bye-bye.
Stephen is a huge Barbara Eden fan, and he called and he won the I Dream a Genie bottle. And we became Facebook friends, and I haven't heard from him in quite some time. And nice guy. I mean, we talk on Facebook about the shot, like I said. I told you, no, we're having the people are listening. I told you they don't want to interrupt the conversation, you know, so.
Really?
But,
that's nice.
But yes, and it's 9:00. I'm sure you've got things to do. So I do want to say.
Archie's looking at me like, yeah, I got to go poop.
Take Archie out. Yeah. So I want to say thank you so very much for joining me tonight. I knew it was going to be a great conversation. And
thank you.
I am so amazed with you. I'm impressed with you. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of you. And my God, my heart breaks for you as well at the same time for everything you've been
through.
Those
are such sweet words. Thank you so much.
And I'm so sorry for everything. Everything. That's just horrible.
And I believe you. Thank you. I can't tell you how much all that means to me. And I guess we're going to end this with giving the free book away.
We want to do it now. Let's see.
Let's do it now.
See.
Joey or Steven. It's one of the two, so it's an easy one.
Yep. Now, 1 second. I got to do it separate.
And it's coming from me, so there you go.
Absolutely. And you're signing it. Don't forget.
Of course I'm signing it.
You got to autograph it. Hold on.
That's right.
Ready. Wasn't ready to do
I used my
bingo.
Magic wand.
Yeah. All right. Ready? Let's shake it up. Oh, that doesn't sound good.
There's not enough names in there.
Oh, here we go. Let's see. It's Joey!
Joey Steele, you got a free book coming to you. You got to give me your address. I'm going to sign it for you, and I will pay the shipping cost. I will take care of it. You got your book, and you've got something else coming along with it, as you know.
Oh, nice.
All right.
Well, I have Joey's number. I will call him after the show. I will get his address for you, and I'll send it over.
Oh, there you go. Okay, great.
And you do what you got, and you do what you got to do. You guys do what you got to do, so.
Yeah, and I love you. Much love to you, Joanne. Much love.
Oh, God. Sean, Doug, it was a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you so much, and I really enjoyed the evening, and yes, we're definitely going to talk. We'll talk again.
Definitely.
All
I
right.
saw the music, and I was impressed.
Yes, well,
yeah. Yeah, and
go.
Archie's looking
everybody.
At me like, I got to go poop, Daddy.
Yeah.
So.
Everybody, Sean Mayotte, Doug Probst, his new book, The Musings of a Narcissist, A Survivor Story. Pick it up. It is an amazing read. It is amazing.
You can get it on Amazon. Can I say something? I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. I just want to add to it. You can get it in paperback version on Amazon, or you can download the PDF format with all color pictures by going to my website and buying it there for only $14.99. It's $19.99 on Amazon. I'm a paperback guy, so I understand people wanting paperbacks. But either way, you'll get a lot more than you got out of this tonight.
And what is your website, Sean, please?
It's called Mayott, Mayott. Now, mayottnow.com.
All right. So, guys, you could get his new book, The Musings of a Narcissist, A Survivor Story, on Amazon, anywhere online, I'm guessing, and also go to his website, mayottnow.com, Mayott, now, Now, and get it now. If you want to know what it's like, you think you have a hard life, walk in this guy's shoes, and you tell me. Read that damn book. So, everybody, thank you so much. Joey, congratulations. Mm-hmm. We'll be calling you shortly to get your information, and Sean's going to hook you up. And thank you so much, hon. It was a pleasure. And you come back anytime, and we're going to talk. Don't worry.
Yeah, we will. I'm honored, and I love Tony for setting us up. It's a great relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, Tony's a sweetheart, too.
He is.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. Everybody, Sean Mayotte, check out his new
book.
Bye-bye.
Love y'all.
Bye-bye. Take care. The Musings of a Narcissist, a Survivor Story. My God. I'm sorry. Don't touch kids, people, especially anybody I know. I will kill you. I will. I'm sorry. I don't care. I will go to jail. I used to say I'm going to get a bumper sticker. Go ahead. Touch my kid. I don't mind going to jail or something. It was like, I don't even remember. I said a long time ago, my kids are older now. They could kick your ass, so I don't have to worry about doing it. So anyway, yeah, nice. I love talking to Sean, Doug, and I didn't say it. I thought I was going to say Sean, Doug about 10 times tonight, and I didn't do it. So I'm looking for my calendar. As you know, it's never close by, and oh, here we go. It's right under this piece of paper right next to me. Thank you, God. Excuse me. I apologize for my voice tonight. I need my inhaler. I don't have enough air tonight. So anyway, tomorrow, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to have back Robert Berry. He's from December People, and I love those guys. And I love their Christmas music is fantastic. And Robert's got a new album out. I can't wait to play his new stuff for you. He's got a song where he worked with where's the title of it? I have it over here, the title of the album. I'm sorry, bear with me. Oh, there's all the papers are all over again. I found out that Einstein had the messiest desk ever, so he was a genius. Not that I'm saying I am, but anyway, we're gonna be playing a new song for Robert titled Never, and it's a song that he worked on with Keith Emerson before he passed, so it's something that people haven't heard yet, probably. And so that's pretty cool. I can't wait to hear that. And Robert's been, like I said, December people. He's played with the ELP, specifically Keith Emerson, and he's with the Greg Kim band now, and now he has his own band called 3.2, and their new album, Third Impression, is really good, and we're going to play a couple of songs of that tomorrow night for Robert. So musician, producer, guitarist, multi-talented, Robert Berry, tomorrow, April 18th, Sunday, at 7 p.m. Eastern. Check it out. And then we've got Michael Whalen on Monday. He's a musician, too. He's written a lot of stuff for TV. I've got more details. I just don't have it in front of me. And then the 21st, that's going to be a biggie. I'm hoping you guys come through. Listen, if everybody could just give a buck, could you imagine if, like, 100,000 people gave a buck? That one person would have $100,000. How cool is that? Wouldn't that be cool if we could all do that for each other? Everybody send each other a dollar. I mean, you're all going to get it back, and you're going to get it back good. So anyway, we're going to have a good night. Good friend of ours, friend of mine, Arlene Brief, and her friend, who I've met and had on the show, comedian Vinnie Mark. He's been on the show before. Very funny guy, sweetheart. He's been taking care of his wife, Jody Wiener, who's also a comedian, and she's had cancer for quite some time, and Vinny has stopped the world to take care of her. And now Vinny has cancer. So it's just like, wow. Come on. Really? Come on. When it rains, it pours, people, you know? It's like, come on. Why is it always going to be on one person? If you're going to spread shit around, let everybody have it. Don't dump it all on one person. Anyway, so we got a great night for you guys tomorrow. We're going to do, not tomorrow, pardon me, on the 21st. And we're going to see if we can help raise some money to pay off some medical bills for Vinny and Jody. And we've got four funny, great comedians coming up, courtesy of Arlene Brief Entertainment. They're each going to do a 10-minute set. And you guys can go to Vinny's GoFundMe page, which is on our link. And whatnot, and you can we'll mention it on the show as well. But the comedians that we will have are Peter Sasso, Jeff Greenberg, Helene Witt, and Debbie Baza, and Vinnie Mark is also going to join us to talk to us, and he'll be joining us. So that's going to be a good evening. On the 24th, we've got singer songwriter Sarah Schroeder Matzkin. And we're going to play some new music for her. Joyce Boulafont is coming up. Everybody knows who Joyce is. Actually, I think if I remember correctly, I try not to do too much research. I try to go with what's in my head. And that's why if it sounds crazy sometimes, because I don't remember a whole lot anymore. I'm getting older. So, you know, the stuff that I need to remember is what I try to remember. So, you know, so Joyce, she, I believe, was supposed to be the role of Mrs. Brady, Carol Brady, on The Brady Bunch. And I know I read that somewhere years ago or heard about it. So, and Ruta Lee is coming back. I love her. Her new book is out, Consider Your Ass Kissed. I can't wait to talk to her. And then we've got Tracy Coriel is going to be joining us, and we're going to be playing music for her late husband, Larry, and he is like the godfather of jazz fusion. So it's going to be pretty cool. We've got a really great, great month here. And next month, we're booked already. I have one date open that I'm holding for somebody that I need to call. I haven't called him yet, and I apologize. Everybody knows that I'm late on telephones and emails because there's just so many coming from so many places, and I love it. And it's just, you guys need to be patient with me, and I appreciate that because you really are. And I thank you all so much. So anyway, you could have been anywhere tonight, and I appreciate you hanging out, and that's really cool. And again, what a pleasure to meet Sean, Doug Prose, Sean Mayotte, Doug Prose. And I mean, what a story. So the book, The Musings of a Narcissist, A Survivor Story, I just can't imagine. How could somebody treat a child beyond me? But anyway, he's doing great, and I'm happy. I'm so happy he's doing so well. Our sponsors, thank you to the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Joey Max Cafe in Harrison, New Jersey. Get out there. The weather is changing. Joey Max is great for that. They've got a great outdoor seating, really cool setup, too. It's really nice. I love it. Katie, I haven't fumbled on this one in a while. KWV Wines. KWV Wines in South Africa. GenieBottles.com. H21 Hand Sanitizer. Tees for the Times and other stuff. Syntech Productions in Oak Harbor, New Jersey. Take a Break from Cancer.org for Pete's Sake. Cloyden Designs in New Jersey. Think Big Picture LLC in New York. Then the Observer Newspaper in Kearney, New Jersey. Thank you all so much. Thank you again to Sean. Take care. What do we want to end with tonight? What do we got that I still have set up here for you guys to close out? Hold on. You know what? We haven't heard this in a while. Be kind. Take care, everybody. Be kind. We'll see you tomorrow night with Robert Berry. I can't wait. Take care. Bye-bye. Be kind.